How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a lot of stuff to talk about here today. There is a pay-per-view this afternoon, believe it or not. The Urban Wrestling Federation Thug Assassin is on moments after we go off the air here. We're going to talk a little bit about that pay-per-view and previous Urban Wrestling Federation events and talk about some of the shows coming up later on in this month, including next weekend, the WWE Royal Rumble, traditionally the second biggest pay-per-view of the year for WWE, which begins the road to WrestleMania. We're going to talk all about that show. Plus, Raw this coming Monday night. Raw this past Monday night. Latest on the John Cena versus Kane storyline, as Kane attempts to get John Cena to join the Dark Side. Realistically, one of the worst storylines of the past couple of years. But we're going to talk about that. Plus, Impact this past Thursday night. Talk about all the matches on the Rumble, some proposed matches for WrestleMania, and more. UFC on FX1 was also this past Saturday night. It was a great show. We're going to talk about that. The show was available for free on FX. Some great knockouts, some great finishes. Give you all the information on that event, plus all of the rest of the news from the weekend. We'll talk the return of Chris Jericho. Talk a lot of different injuries, including one to a WWE star and one to the Open the Freedom Gate champion from Dragon Gate USA. Talk about Pro Elite from this past Saturday night. Gina Carano's new movie is in theaters right now. Roger Ebert gave the movie and Gina herself a great review. We'll tell you about that, plus some interesting information in the Roger Ebert review that even I did not know. And maybe it's not breaking news. Maybe he just presumed. We'll tell you about that. Plus, big changes to Ring of Honor backstage. A man who has been there since the very beginning is out. We'll tell you about that. Plus, so much more. We got a lot of stuff to talk about on the program here today. We'll be back after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. All we do, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. This afternoon, there is a pay-per-view event. Actually, there's two pay-per-view events because the Future Stars of Wrestling is also running. I just got their flyer in my email. I don't really know a lot about it, except on the poster for Future Stars of Wrestling are a bunch of wrestlers from, like, a decade ago. It's an amazing poster. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in a bit. But, Mike, I don't know if you've ever seen a Urban Wrestling Federation UWF pay-per-view, but there's something else. There is nothing like the UWF. And I'm not sure if you get in the pay-per-view this afternoon, but I am, and I'm excited.
I am indeed, and I am basing this all off of the previous two pay-per-views that I heard you talk about in review, and the way my day has gone today, with a few, you know, dryer and washing machine issues in my house, flooding it out, not making me very happy, I need the type of entertainment that I don't need to think about. I need the type of entertainment that's going to, you know, deliver on what it says, and I have a feeling that the UWF Thug Assassin pay-per-view will do that, and I will forget about my woes just for 2 hours.
I have seen every Urban Wrestling Federation pay-per-view, and what can I say about it? The moment the first show ended, like, the moment it ended, I thought, that has to be the worst pay-per-view I've ever seen in my life. So then, later, my buddy Vinny came over, and I made him watch the show again so that we could review it. And I watched the entire show a second time. And upon second viewing, I had a massive change of heart. Now, granted, the first pay-per-view, they had a lot of problems. Mostly introducing about 10,000 characters all at once, and there were a lot of production gaffes. You couldn't hear what anybody was saying, but it was an hour long, and it was like absolutely nothing in wrestling nowadays. I guess the easiest way to explain the Urban Wrestling Federation is, as it was explained to me, it's Grand Theft Auto combined with professional wrestling. And that is, once I had it in my mind that this is what I'm watching here, I had a change of heart. I greatly enjoyed their second pay-per-view. Again, I had absolutely no idea what was going on. There were too many characters. There was no way to differentiate one person from another. But again, it was different. And I guess the best way to explain how different the Urban Wrestling Federation is to explain to you that men have died. Characters have been killed off. Characters have been shot at with guns. It's so completely preposterous. And if you go in there expecting, like, traditional professional wrestling, this ain't for you. But if you go in there thinking, okay, this is totally different. This is exactly what it proclaims itself to be. Hood Justice. Thug Assassin is a fitting name because sometimes you'll see for example, CZW runs Cage of Death. But no one dies on CZW shows. And I don't want anyone to die. I'm talking like fake death. Like in the storyline, you know, so-and-so, he got taken out by so-and-so's posse. That's what you get in the UWF. And when you realize what this is and you accept it for what it is, and you watch it knowing that this is the universe that this UWF exists in, it's actually a lot of fun. It is completely uncensored. The commentary is like nothing that you have ever heard in pro wrestling.
I would figure that it's nothing you've ever seen or commentary you've never heard of. I've never really seen, you know, guys be wiped off the face of the earth, unless you're counting the Giant falling off of Cobo Hall during the truck challenge.
Yeah. There was Low Life Louis Ramos, I believe, was his name.
Low Life Louis.
Low Life Louis. I believe he killed a man a couple of shows ago by putting a plastic bag over his head and suffocating him to death. Because I remember the show went off the air and I thought, wow, that was pretty wild. And then, like, when I watched the next show, I was like, whatever happened to the guy that had the bag over his head? Was he killed? And apparently on Thug Assassin, the show is going to open up with a recap of everything that's went down, and we're going to find out who, in fact, has been killed on Urban Wrestling Federation programming. So that's how these men settle their vendettas. So anyway, that show is this afternoon. It's crazy. And I was told, I have talked to people from the UWF, and you know, sometimes when a show is bad, like a TNA pay-per-view, sometimes there's like a bad TNA pay-per-view, and I do a review, and I tear the show apart, and I talk about how horrible the show was, and TNA fans are like, man, Brian, that's so mean. Man, that show was great. But in reality, if you actually talk to the people that work the show, the actual wrestlers, they're like, my God, that was a horrible show. You know, it's not like these people are defending the show if the show was bad. They realize how bad the show is. I've talked to people in the UWF, especially after, like, the first show. People within the company were like, man, that show was horrible. But it's going to be better next time. I've been told from people that have worked the tapings that have set up this show that it's too bad that the Urban Wrestling Federation is strictly a pay-per-view entity, because they think that this set of tapings was actually really good in terms of storylines and in terms of the wrestling and in terms of everything. Like, from day one to today, I've told it is improved drastically. Now, the important question is that a positive or a negative for me as a viewer? I guess we'll find out. But apparently it's improved dramatically, for better or worse. And if you've ever seen the first few shows, you know what that means, for better or for worse. But the show airs at 5 Pacific, 8 Eastern tonight on pay-per-view. And it's only an hour long. It makes it a lot easier that it's only a one-hour pro wrestling event. Sometimes shows go too long. And we'll see what we can see. And Mike, I guess next week we'll talk about this event.
I can handle that. I watched the promo for this Thug Assassin pay-per-view, and there's a man walking out of the entrance, and there's a sign up, or I guess somebody had spray painted on the wall, a street sign saying Mean Street. So that, yeah, I don't I'm not sure what to take from this, but I know I need the distraction. And again, this I'm assuming is not like $45 or anything like that for that hour or two, which makes me happy.
I think it's like $9.99 or $14.99. I'm not sure. Probably four. It depends on your provider, but probably about $14.
See, just hearing you talk about this thing has given me $15 worth of enjoyment, so I can imagine watching it what it's going to be. So, and really, at the end of the day, isn't that what it's about? Are you getting your money's worth after separating from it?
Are you being entertained?
Which, you know, a lot of places can't say that they're doing.
Yes.
Look at TNA for that. Yeah, you know, something tells me they don't have the same issues in the UWF as they do in TNA. You won't have to worry about no contest finishes to title matches on pay-per-view month after month. They're not going to have a non-finish. And if they do have a non-finish, I can see the referee just, well, pulling out bags and putting them over guys' heads and saying, you know what, there is a finish, you guys are finished, we're done with this.
Essentially, yes. The wrestling action is actually, it wasn't until I think last month that I actually saw a bad match. Like, there was all this craziness and insanity and skits where you couldn't hear anything that anybody was saying. But then you'd have a wrestling match. It was like, that was a good match. And it's guys that maybe you've never seen before. And then, you know, even the skits. It's like, sometimes I had absolutely no idea what anybody was saying because the audio was terrible. But in the last couple of shows, they've fixed the audio issues. And essentially, the Urban Wrestling Federation is a bunch of pro wrestlers of various ethnicities, as you can determine by the Urban Wrestling name of the promotion, and also a bunch of rappers. So, like, every rapper, they kind of have their own, like, their own posse, their own crew. There's, like, the New York crew and the Brooklyn crew. And so the hardest part is trying to figure out who is who and who is on whose team, which is tough when you only run one pay-per-view every 3 months or every 2 months. That's only an hour long. That's the biggest problem with the UWF. But you could tell, like, some of these rappers are having, like, the time of their life doing this. And some of the skits are so ridiculously funny, whether on purpose or not, that that's really, to me, what separates UWF from anything else is the rappers and the fun they're having. We're going to talk more about this and more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking the Urban Wrestling Federation pay-per-view, which takes place moments after the show goes off the air on pay-per-view, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And I'm talking Mike into getting the show, although he'd already been talked into it from previous reviews. But again, it's like nothing you've ever seen. It is clearly the most unique wrestling organization going today. And does it have a long-term future? I don't know. It's hard to run pay-per-view with no television. They don't have television. But while they're around, I am going to enjoy them. I have a buddy who's on our message board. They call him Junior Horseman. And we watch every UWF show together. I text him or he texts me. I remember at the last show, he just sent me a text at like 9 a.m. Sunday morning and just said, what was the name of the last show? It was UWF. Oh, Hood Justice. He texted me at like 9 a.m. and it just said, Hood Justice Sunday! With an exclamation point. And I was like, that's right! And we set it up and came over and watched the show and had a good laugh. And that's something missing from wrestling nowadays. Like the last TNA pay-per-view I watched alone. Even my buddy Vince didn't come over for this show. Nobody came over! You know how much it sucks? This is one of the reasons nobody buys TNA pay-per-views. You know how much it sucks to have to drop $44.95 on a pay-per-view and, like, nobody comes over to watch it with you? And, like, that sucks. That's, like, the kind of thing where if this were not my job, it doesn't matter how much I like wrestling. If this weren't my job, the idea of dropping $44.95 on a TNA show, knowing that I'm not going to have a single friend come over to watch it with me, I wouldn't drop the money. I just wouldn't watch the show. It's just a fact. And that's why Royal Rumble does a good number every year, and WrestleMania, is because those are the two WWE shows where you're pretty much guaranteed to get friends over. Because friends come over, and they all pick a number, or they all pick a guy, or whatever, for the Royal Rumble, and they all sit around and watch it together, even today. And WrestleMania is obviously the biggest show of the year. But outside of that, when you're looking at a $54.95 price tag for an HD WWE pay-per-view, and it's like, okay, will Bob come over for this? No. Will my buddy Jeff come over? No. You know, nobody wants to come over for the show, so it's like, okay, am I going to really drop $54.95 on TLC when I know nobody's coming over to watch it, and I can just watch it for free tomorrow for 2 hours? Probably not. And it's a big problem nowadays, and it's a growing problem with UFC based on foot traffic in my house.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's, you know, there was one thing, you know, it's easy to make fun of, like, the Nitro parties and things like that, but I remember I was in college at that time, and, you know, it was, and of course, you could say this is for all the wrong reasons, but people get together and drink and just, you know, it was an excuse to sit around and poke fun and drink, and it was something to do. And if you're not getting any entertainment value, and with TNA, you know that, and they've, you know, it's WWE's the same way. UFC's this way for different reasons. It's an overextension, and do you want to pay the money to see those guys, even though odds are, you know, if you spend the money, you're probably going to get a good show. There's going to be enough on there that'll make you happy that you spent the money. But, yeah, it's just not the same if there's not people around. I mean, these are social events. That's why the Mike Tyson fights were, you know, so big. And Holyfield and Foreman was got 1.4 million buys years and years ago. 1992, I think it was. Because it was a big social event, and you got people over, and it made it more fun, and you do get into it. And it is, you know, it's something to be said of, you know, why am I doing this? If you know you're going to watch a show that's not giving you any satisfaction, you're watching that show not getting any satisfaction out of it, you're thinking about the fact that you're going to see a bunch of stuff free for the next day anyway, and on top of it, there's nobody around to even share your pain, yeah, it's bad. Again, the UFC in a different way in that, yeah, they're spread thin, and they ran into a problem with Montreal, which I know we're going to get into later on. Taking off a pay-per-view in March, which they have not done, and I don't know if they've ever done that in modern times, at least. So it's too bad. And again, can UWF carve its niche by being 2 hours of programming for $10 that, you know, at least is something to do and an excuse to have fun and to sit down and watch it? And who knows?
Yeah, UFC. We should talk a little bit about UFC. They had a show on Fuel, and as you mentioned, they don't want to say canceled, but they've postponed Montreal due to not having a main event for the show, which is the problem when you are running as many events as they're running this year between FX, Fuel, Fox, and pay-per-view. It's going to be an interesting year for UFC in terms of what numbers look like, because again, if UFC only had 12 pay-per-views a year and no other events, the pay-per-view numbers would be doing very well. Because once a month, you get all your friends together, you watch the show. Nowadays, there are so many shows. There's a show virtually every weekend. Those days are gone. UFC on Fox is coming up this coming weekend. And very, very little buzz about the show. I don't know among you and your friends what people are talking about. But, you know, I have a couple of friends that are real hardcores, and they're not even talking about it, really. They're caught up on whatever show is current. So that's going to be it's going to be an interesting one. As far as what kind of number they draw, obviously the first one got a tremendous amount of publicity and did at least in terms of viewers, almost 10 million viewers, 9.4 million viewers, for the main event of the show. And, this one, I don't see doing that kind of rating. What are your thoughts?
I think it actually will. It's, you know, because it's going to be longer, obviously. I have a feeling it's going to get more eyeballs than the first one did. It won't maintain the number I think the first one did. But I think it actually will, throughout the night, get more eyeballs on it. You know, today's going to be interesting with the Giants 49ers NFC Championship game taking place on Fox. You figure they're going to really, you know, saturate everything today and all week long and use their sister networks to do the same thing. FX, obviously, it gets highly, you know, it's one of the top three cable networks day in and day out. You figure they're going to be soaking that up this week during their shows with at least some promos for the show. So I think it's actually going to do pretty well. But no, I mean, as it stands right now, no, there's not significant buzz going into it, which, you know, again, is too bad. And it's disappointing even more in that Mark Munoz is out. Then we get the San and Bisping fight that really, I think a majority of us, I think 100% of the people that really logically looked at this and said they're really risking things, this was, going to be the fight, and we've missed out on a lot of promos. We've missed out on a lot of hype that I don't think Fox, and I don't blame the UFC for this, I blame Fox for this, I don't think they've done a good enough job driving home, you know, the personalities they have. And granted, it's a little bit one-sided. You know, you don't think of, you know, even though he's got the perfect arm bar and Phil Davis has been, you know, very exciting, you know, we haven't heard enough Rashad Evans out there. We haven't heard enough, you know, Sonnen and Bisping in a mainstream form where, you know, to the mainstream sports fan where they're really going to be, you know, seeming like they're going to be dragged into this. But again, I think the rating is going to do just fine. I'm not even worried about this one as much as the third one that they would have coming up. Again, I think this is going to get more eyeballs than the first one throughout the night. Whether it maintains it the whole night or not, I don't know. But I don't worry about this one too much.
It's tough to say. I mean, it should get, the rating should grow throughout the evening because it is a longer event, but it has not had nearly the level of promotion of the last event. And the main event, Rashad Evans, Phil Davis, not exactly a barn burner of a main event. Bisping and Chael Sonnen is a good fight. Bisping, of course, is replacing Mark Munoz in a fight that most people probably figured should have been made in the first place, but they've had basically a week to try to build this thing up, and they've done, I mean, mainstream nothing. Online they've done some things back and forth, so I guess we'll see what the go home build for this fight is. But and then on top of that, you've got Damian Maia and Chris Weidman, which means absolutely nothing to your casual fan. The prelims are on Fuel, which again, unfortunately, nobody gets Fuel, so it's not like you're going to build an audience for Fox with the Fuel fight. So it's going to be interesting. I don't watch football. So I don't know how hard they've been plugging this on the football telecasts, but I do know that when I didn't watch football 6 months ago or 4 months ago or whatever it was, November, I mean, I saw ads in October and November everywhere for UFC on Fox One. So there's a great deal less promotion for this show, and I guess we'll see what that means in terms of viewers. It is going the day before the Royal Rumble. I don't really think that's going to make any effect whatsoever on Rumble, unless it's just like such a blowaway card with so much excitement that people are just like exhausted the next day. But we'll see. What was your thought on the Evans Davis fight?
It's. After seeing Rashad Evans in that last fight, I mean, he looks like a million bucks. I'm a big fan of Phil Davis. I think he's going to be, you know, I got a soft spot for amateur wrestlers anyway. I mean, and he's just, he's very good. This is too much of a step up, I think, in competition for him right now in Rashad Evans. And I find it difficult to believe that Davis is going to be able to beat him. And frankly, now that John Jones beat Lyoto Machida, you know, at the end of the day, Rashad Evans can't lose this because they're really going to be kicking themselves in the butt with how some things have gone this year. And to not be able to get John Jones and Rashad Evans if Phil Davis wins is just, it's going to make what, you know, going into this year is a long year with injuries and some other things anyway, it's going to make what looks to be a long year even longer.
All right, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about Chael Sonnen. I actually saw Chael Sonnen live and in person yesterday. What a worker this guy is. Talk about that after the break. More news as well. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94. XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking about UFC on Fox 2. Chael Sonnen and Michael Bisping is the semi-main event. Last night, I went to an amateur mixed martial arts show, and Chael Sonnen was there in the crowd, and I just look at him, and he's like such a worker, such a pro wrestler. And here he is fighting on UFC on Fox. And before we get back to that, how many times have you gone to amateur MMA, Mike?
I've never actually been to an amateur MMA event.
Oh, my God. This show was awesome. It was, I believe there were 27 fights on the show.
27.
And it started at 7 o'clock p.m. and ended before 11. So they went through 27 fights in less than 4 hours. There was, like, never a dull moment. A bunch of the fights. Here's a lesson for everybody out there listening that watches MMA and decides they want to be a fighter. Just a little piece of advice from watching last night's show. Get trained. This place was called the Full Contact Fighting Federation, FCFF. They run. They were at the Roseland Theater in Portland last night, a building that I have wrestled in the past. And now they run MMA and sold out. I mean, packed sold out. This was like a decade ago. You'd have done a good crowd at the Roseland for pro wrestling. But nowadays, like all those people that used to go to pro wrestling or would have gone to pro wrestling, now they're going to MMA. And it's like, I don't know this for sure because I've never interviewed the people that run the organization. But, I mean, I would bet you any sum of money that the Full Contact Fighting Federation, all these people grew up watching Portland wrestling. I mean, the ring announcer, he's like he's some wacky guy in a cowboy hat. They actually have the commentators. They do part of their commentary over the house mic. And I heard terms like slobber knocker during the heavyweight championship fight. I mean, it's such a pro wrestling show. It's just there's a bunch of people doing real fights in a cage. And it's awesome. And the amateur fights, it was like, you know, in this corner, we've got from such and such Washington. He is a wrestler, weighing in at 135 pounds, blah, blah, blah. And then they go, and in the blue corner, he's a self-trained fighter, hailing from such and such Oregon. And I'm like, a self-trained fighter? And so it's a guy that, like, you know, he's never fought before. He watched a bunch of UFC tapes, and he decided he wanted to fight for the Full Contact Fighting Federation. He made his weight, and he's in the cage, which, you know, thank God his opponent was also debuting. But every guy, and I got there late, so maybe there was a guy, like, real low on the card who was a self-trained fighter that won. But every fight that I witnessed by a self-trained fighter, this guy got slaughtered. And, of course, these are amateur fights, so, like, I think they're like three-minute rounds or something like that. Whatever it is, I never saw one. All the amateur fights over in like a minute. You know, in 109 of the first round via stoppage. You know, these self-trained fighters go in there and they last a minute and they get beat. So everybody had their own ring music. They had their ring introduction. The fight went a minute. They were out of there. Next song hits. I mean, this was a well-run show. And the main event, actually, was two women, one of whom my wife sponsors, her ITAP Boys clothing line. The girls were the main event of this 27-fight show, fighting for the 115-pound title. And I'm not just saying this because I know the girl, but this was like fight of the night. And in fact, this same girl, Liz Tracy, got fight of the night, is voted by the fans on the last show. So this is not just me saying this, but first round, the fighter that my wife sponsors, Liz Tracy, got caught in an armbar and wouldn't tap. And as it turns out, we learned today, she broke her ulna. She broke her arm.
Ow.
And she went out for the next two rounds. And Second round was like as even a round as you'll ever see. And in the third round, with a broken arm, she caught the other girl in an arm bar, and the other girl would not tap. I don't have a report on the other girl's arm, but if the other girl broke his arm, I wouldn't be surprised either. And Liz Tracy easily won the third round, just destroyed this girl. But it went to the judges. They had a split decision. One judge gave it to Liz Tracy, and the other two gave it to the other girl, all based on round two. And so Liz lost. But this fight was like, it was so awesome. And there were two other fighters on the show that, like, you might actually see somewhere someday. One guy was like, I think they called him Mini Hulk or something like that. I think he was 100, I think he weighed 138. But this guy was awesome. And then there was another guy from Universal Jiu-Jitsu down in Camas. It's a Pedro Sauer affiliate. And the fight went about a minute. It was 145-pound division. He went for a triangle. The dude lifted him up and powerbombed him. And I mean full-fledged Quentin Jackson powerbomb. But as he noted, luckily the canvas is padded. He took the powerbomb, and in getting powerbombed, he locked the triangle in tighter, and the dude that powerbombed him tapped. It was so awesome. So, point of this is, if you have never gone to amateur MMA and it's coming up in your area, you've got to go. Like, whether you're an MMA fan or not, you've got to go. Because, like, there was no boring fights on this show. Every fight was fun. Everybody just goes out, like, crazy people trying to win these fights. You know, I don't know how to explain it other than it was just like 4 hours. Like, not for one second was I bored during these 4 hours. And it was a well put together event, and it was a lot of fun. So if it comes to your area, you've got to go. In some ways, it's more fun than like the big events, because sometimes the big events, like a big UFC, you know, there's thousands and thousands of dollars on the line and title shots and that sort of thing. So sometimes people fight a little more cautiously, or, you know, they're more careful about what they do. No, these dudes on the amateur shows, they just rush into guillotines. They go full bore into it's just craziness. So if you love MMA, or if you don't watch a lot of MMA but you love pro wrestling, you got to try an amateur MMA event, because those things are money.
Now, did anyone have, with all these guys who were self-trained, was anyone announced with their own fighting style? Was there any, you know, he's a master of thug jitsu or something like that? Or anybody from parts unknown?
No, we didn't have a thug jitsu, but there was like one guy, you know, he's a little bit fat, and he's got like some shorts that he got at Target, and he's got some gloves that they obviously gave him. And they said, and hailing from Lincoln City, Oregon, or wherever, he is a street fighter. He is self-trained. And I'm like, oh, this should be good. A self-trained street fighter. And he got slaughtered, absolutely slaughtered by his opponent. And it was almost like they matched up the self-trained guys with wrestlers, you know, like 0-0 wrestlers that had no MMA experience but had at least trained. And, you know, they just go in there and take down the street fighters and pound the crap out of them. But it was just fun times up and down the show.
I've been to a lot of, you know, amateur boxing shows and professional wrestling shows that have tried to do the, you know, do commentary over the house mic, which, to put it mildly, can be a dicey proposition, just depending on who's doing it, because it's usually something as to the promoter and the promoter's friend, who aren't exactly the, you know, most eloquent speakers in the entire world. So how was it there? Did it get in the way of anything?
No, because the announcers, the way they did it is they weren't talking nonstop. They were there, and they were there to alert you if something big happened. So, for example, there was one fight, I think it was for the heavyweight title. One dude was like 6'10". 6'10". And the other guy was like 6'5", these two giant beasts. And so they go in there and start swinging, and the announcers didn't really say a whole lot, but if, like, somebody landed a high kick, they'd go, oh, high kick by so-and-so from the blue corner. And then they'd be quiet again. And if there was a takedown, they'd say, double leg takedown by such-and-such. Everybody would cheer. And, you know, it was basically like that. I mean, it wasn't like nonstop commentary. It was like they were there to alert you as to the big turning points in the match or the big spots in the match. And it was just amazing to watch these fans, too, because, like I said, the Rosen Theater, I mean, let's just say there was 1,000 people in there. There was only 250 chairs. So you had like 750 people just standing around, you know, just this. It was crazy. And these people were so into the fights. There was never a moment where they were quiet. They were always cheering for somebody or into something or popping for whatever. And, you know, I think you probably get videos and DVDs of FCFF. I think it's FCFF.com. You can probably go up there, Full Contact Fighting Federation. You can find it online if you want to look around. But it was amazing, too, because, like, I've been to a lot of amateur pro wrestling, and meaning indie pro wrestling, and then this, and it was like, you know, these title matches, the people were into the championship matches. It was like, oh, my God, there's a championship on the line here. We're going to find out who the better man or woman is. And they were super into the announcements for the title fights. And it's like, it's nothing like that for amateur pro wrestling. Nobody cares about the titles. Nobody believes anybody is a champion. It's just, this was a show to see, I'm telling you.
And if you want to find out more about Liz Tracy, you can actually listen to Whitney talk about her on Glove Up or Shut Up Radio.
That's right. All of this up at itapboys.com. Head up there. Yeah, this was, I mean, she was so deep in this armbar, and I was like, oh, man, it's over. I mean, this was like a minute of the first round. And her arm, I mean, at the time, I was like, it has to be broken. But, you know, she managed to get out. And, you know, they kind of iced her elbow between the first and second round, but she just kept coming. And I was like, I guess she's fine. That's craziness. And then she got the other girl in the armbar in the third round, and that one looked bad, too. And then that girl got out, and I just sat there thinking, okay, first off, both these girls would absolutely slaughter me. Second off, both these girls are tougher than anybody else on this show, without question. And then later, you know, you find out that she actually had her arm broken and then fought two more rounds with a broken arm. And you never would have known either, so... These are some tough, crazy, crazy people on these amateur events.
But they don't have to cut a bunch of weight either, which, you know what, I guess since we talked about it a lot last week and everything as it relates to the pros, and we talked about it on the website this week and in different forms, how were the weight divisions for these guys? I mean, any thought into it at all?
The weight divisions for the amateur?
Yeah, are there, or is it just
basically
all?
Yeah, and you know what? Let me tell you this. Same-day weigh-ins.
See, and that's, again, it can be done, period, and it will work over time. Will there be guys who cut to get to that, even if it's 2 hours before a fight? Yes, but then they affect their own performance, and people go, well, it may be more dangerous that way. You can't babysit everybody. I still think that's the best approach to do. You can't take all the harm out of fighting, and you can't babysit everyone with everything they're going to do to their bodies. That still is the, again... Amateur fighting, amateur wrestling, jiu-jitsu tournaments, they all have same-day weigh-ins. It makes sense.
Yeah, they weighed in at 10 a.m. for a show that started at 7. So you made weight, and it hopefully didn't cut too much weight because you had 7-8 hours to rehydrate or whatever. But you didn't have a full 24 hours. And, you know, everybody, there were no stories of, oh, my God, so-and-so missed weight, the fight is off. No, because Liz, for example, Team Viggity put her diet together to make weight. She usually fought at 125. She had to fight at 115. They just had it set, so, okay, you make your weight at 10 a.m. and you don't go to the fight dehydrated. And she made weight because those are the rules. People abide by them. We're going to head to a break, everybody. Back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. So much stuff to talk about today. Haven't even talked about UFC on FX, which was this past Saturday night. We're going to get into that after the break. But UFC on Fox, we were briefly talking about that before we got into amateur mixed martial arts and how awesome it is. And Mike, we've got a quick moment here before the top of the hour break. What is your prediction for the Chael Sonnen fight?
I'm taking Sonnen. And again, it's nothing against Bisping. I just, you know, as good as Bisping's wrestling has gotten, and again, he's decent. Sonnen's just such a machine, and the last fight was almost an aberration, and him winning it so quickly. But again, unless he's just so consumed and has got his mind wandering so much to the promotion and all the oars he has in the water when it comes to Anderson Silva, that's the only way I can see him losing this fight. I think the Munoz fight, in a lot of ways, would have been far more difficult for him and far more dangerous. And again, this is no bash against Bisping. I just think Sonnen is clearly the second best in that division. And again, unless his brain starts to wander somewhere else, I find it difficult that he does not, you know, clearly out-wrestle Bisping the entire time and impose his will on him and win the fight.
Sonnen is claiming that he's never going to face Anderson Silva, although the winner of the fight gets Silva. But he's doing it in such a way so as to when the fight occurs, he can just say, well, I can't believe the man accepted. His claim is that Anderson Silva is never going to accept a fight with him. So to bill this as a number one contenders match is preposterous. But of course, you know, obviously if they've billed it as such and then Anderson is okay with facing the winner, it's going to be an interesting fight because, you know, Sonnen won four. In fact, he won every round until he got caught in a triangle at the end of the fifth. But Anderson Silva is got some serious injury problems, back, shoulder, and I don't know what kind of condition he's going to come back in, and that's going to be an interesting fight. We'll talk about that when we come back from the hourly break. Got a lot of other news to talk about as well, including some Royal Rumble previews and predictions. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. Lots of stuff to talk about today. We're on every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, before the break, we were talking about the potential of Sonnen Silva 2. A lot of injuries Anderson Silva is suffering from and recovering from. Back, shoulder. He's getting old. He's nearing 40. I think 37, 38 years old at this point, or soon to be. And at some point, he's going to be old. Is that going to happen, do you feel, before or after his rematch with Chael Sonnen?
I think it would happen after. In fact, I think if he were to go wipe the table with Sonnen, I forget about even wiping the table with him, if he just beats him, I could see him saying that's going to be it for a while, or at least going into a semi-retirement, you know, maybe saying that's it, but never officially, you know, hanging it up for a while. But, yeah, I can absolutely see that happening. But, you know, I'm sure the UFC this year, no matter how injured he is or not, is going to try to make it as much worth his while as humanly possible to get that fight together, because it's one of the handfuls that they have where people will have no problem spending $55 on it.
That is the semi-main on the show, and the final match, Damian Maia, Chris Weidman. Weidman is on the show as a replacement for, I think, Bisping. It was Bisping-Maia, and then Bisping got pulled for the Chael fight, and then Damian Maia is now facing Weidman. And any predictions on that fight?
Yeah, they in hindsight, they should have had Pat Barry on there instead. But, no, I think Maia wins it again. You know, the Maia, again, he talk about making out and how everything went down. Maia is the one who really did it as well. So, you know, it's unfortunate, though, again, with happenstance, that you're not going to get a shot at a really big knockout or have a knockout artist on there. And, you know, hopefully they show some undercard fights on the main show, because I think they're going to need to.
UFC on FX1 when we come back from the break, plus the Royal Rumble, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking about UFC and WWE in these next few segments. UFC on FX1 was Saturday night. Fun show. Mike, what'd you think?
I thought it was a really good show. You know, it was so awkwardly timed on the West Coast, unfortunately. One, the day being Friday, which, you know, at some point, if you're going to move a day off Saturday, you know, it had to happen sooner or later. So, you know, maybe this gets people into a routine, but, you know, it's going to be kind of tough. I thought the same thing when NBC Sports, which used to be Versus, Freddie Roach was the announcer. They started up a boxing series, and they did that Saturday night. And there was good timing in a way because there was no pro football playoffs on. College football's ended. You know, basketball's early. Hockey's, you know, kind of early in the game right now for a lot of people. So there wasn't a ton of competition on, but still it's like I wonder if anybody even knows this is happening. And to be honest, I was getting the same feelings when it came to the FX show. You know, I knew I was watching. I knew a lot of, you know, UFC's hardcore fan base was watching. But I was wondering if it really got out there, since I don't watch, unfortunately, a whole lot of TV. I'm not sure how people who watch all the FX shows, It's Always Sunny, and the ton of shows that they have on there, if any of them happen to be tuning in on a Friday night, because, you know, it's a tough night in that people go out on Friday night. Friday and Saturday night is tough for, at least to me, to pull people between 18 and 49, because if they're going to go out one night, and a lot of times it's going to be that night. So, especially on the West Coast, where they weren't even home from work yet by the time the show started. So, I like the show. It was a good presentation from the UFC. You got a little bit of everything on there. I mean, it was as good of a show, you know, a first show outside of not having super huge names. It was as good of a show as you could put on, because you got a little bit of everything. It really showcased how good how exciting the action can be. I thought Anik and Florian did a very good job on commentary. So everything seemed to go great. It's just, you know, were they able to draw over the FX watcher or the mainstream sports guy? I don't know. I didn't get the feeling that they were going to, but I can't fault them for how the night turned out, because I thought it was great.
I thought Anik and Florian did a good job. I missed Rogan and Mike Goldberg. It just, they're the best. You know, nothing against Anik and Florian. But, you know, I whenever I can kind of, I zone out of commentary, that's not necessarily a great thing. It's not a bad thing. Like, you get hit with it in the face on Raw because the commentary sucks so bad. But, you know, when you kind of don't even notice it sometimes, I guess that's not a positive, but it's not really a negative. You're not being hammered down how horrible these announcers are. One thing about them as a commentary duo is it me, or do they sound like almost exactly the same?
They're not as distinctive as, like, you know, a Moro Boss or a Goldberg Rogan or something like that. I can see that, yes.
Yes, I was sitting there trying to figure out who was speaking half the time.
Not a whole lot of bass there. They need to bring in somebody, drop some bass in that voice.
Yes. Jim Miller, Melvin Gillard was the main event. Miller nearly stopped early and then made a huge comeback and got the rear naked choke submission. And a very exciting fight. Jim Miller is one tough dude, hard-working fella. Everybody loves the guy. And Melvin, we'll see what happens. He's begun training jiu-jitsu. He's sworn within a year he's going to tap somebody out. He has, meanwhile, been tapped out, I think, twice due to rear naked choke in a recent fight, so needs to work on some back defense. But it was a fun show, and or a fun fight, and Jim Miller, he's a tough dude.
He's just, you know, again, you put him in that line of hard-headed, hard-nosed, you know, tough amateur wrestlers, and he is very good. And, you know, the last blemish he's had was the last fight he had, you know, the fight against Ben Henderson. And you can't fault a guy for losing to Ben Henderson, and he had no shame in that fight at all. I mean, he looked, you know, he did look good, although he just got beat by the better guy that night. But, you know, Miller is just, You want to take Gilliard. You do. You just do. You look at the, you know, you hear him talk, and you always rally behind him, and you get into him. But it's because of things like that, you know, that happened on Friday night, where it's just, you know, God bless Josh Nason for picking him. I just didn't have enough guts to. And Miller, you know, he's hard to kill, and Gilliard proved that too. I mean, a little bit of arrogance there, and just trying to shake him off when Miller was able to get control of him and get his back, where it was like, no, you can't do that. That's a very big, you know, strong man, a deceptively strong man who just, you know, lodged himself behind Yard and put on the choke, wrapped him up in a body triangle, and just choked the life out of him. And, you know, once again, we're left with that shot of, Melvin sitting there in the middle of the ring, you know, hands wrapped around his knees, looking around as though, I can't believe it happened again. And, you know, how many times can you see him go, you can't believe it's happening again, over and over again?
We also had another submission, Josh Neer guillotine Dwayne Ludwig in another exciting fight. Just had a scramble. Ludwig's neck was right there. Josh clamped it on, and that was the end of that. I was hoping this fight ended with Neer knocking him out in 4 seconds after all of the talk over the last several months about did Dwayne Ludwig take the record, but that didn't happen.
No, but, you know, it was funny. Even though it went the way it did and Banks had a zillion and one fights, and the fight was actually good. I thought both guys actually looked pretty good. It's just that I was, you know, Neer did what he had to do. I was surprised Ludwig, you know, was able to get caught like that. But, you know, there were a couple of those types of fights on the card. I mean, it opened that way, you know, and it closed that way. And this was just another example, too, where it's like the other guy could have won, but something happened.
Christian Moorcraft and Pat Barry had a battle. No other way to describe it. This is when we need the FCFF ring announcer to talk about how this was a slobber knocker.
Oh, yeah. This was the professional version of an amateur fight, and it wasn't pride level, but it, you know, you can't get pride level anymore, really, I don't think, too often. I mean, you know, you get Henderson and, you know, that last fight, but very rarely do you get a fight where you go, okay, an old-fashioned slobber knocker, you know, not much on technique and just a whole lot of guys kicking the crap out of each other.
Pat Barry is a tremendously charismatic fella. I don't know if he's ever going to be a great fighter. He has claimed, my ground game is better than you think, and I am training a lot of submissions, and I don't know if he's serious or not. And God knows with Pat Barry, you never know if he's serious. But he has claimed that he is not going to cut his hair until he gets a submission in UFC.
This could be great because looking at Pat Barry's hair, he may be able to have, like, the big afro. I'm not sure the way his hair grows, but you know what? I will be all for that. And it's hard to take him seriously. Well, it's not hard to take him seriously as a fighter in certain aspects, but... You know, when he said his the people had joked to him that his jiu-jitsu coach was James Toney, I thought that was good. And at the end of the interview, he even planked, which I don't think has ever happened in an octagon.
Yes.
He planked the octagon.
Yes, he did. He's a great man.
He pours charisma, and he's one of those guys, because of the way he is, and I didn't see the undercard, so I can't say, but I did hear you guys talking about it, as far as when guys get microphones stuck in their face, even if you're not the greatest fighter in the world, if you give people a reason to watch you, if you give people a reason to be interested in you, and you give people, you know, the UFC the reason to put you out there, for people to stick microphones in your face and for you to be charismatic, that's all you need. And he's a guy where, yeah, he might lose 3 fights in a row, but as long as they're exciting and as long as he keeps, you know, trying to hype himself and put himself out there, he's going to have a job, and I think people should really learn from that.
You know, going back to the amateur event I went to last night, there was not one bad promo on the show. These guys were awesome. And I don't know if it's because the ring announcer in the cowboy hat brought some comic relief or if he just asked the right questions. But he asked these guys, you know, like, what'd you think of the fight and who's next? And they all had an answer. And, you know, it wasn't like a great interview or anything like that for some of the guys, but it was like, you know, I'm going to come here, I'm going to take some time off, I'm going to come back and defend my title against anybody, and I want so-and-so. And I was like, God, these guys are, everyone on the show was better than half of the UFC on FX crew, so these guys need to work on promos. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Every Sunday afternoon, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, before the commercial, I know some people might be upset when I say that these MMA guys need to work on their promos, but listen, you don't have to go out there and be Dusty Rhodes. You don't have to go out there and be a clown.
Luke Thomas will be very upset if you're Dusty Rhodes.
You don't have to go out there and be a dingbat, but If they ask you, after you win a fight, who's next, and you, virtually in a half stupor, respond, I don't care. I mean, you should just be fired, in my opinion. It's just like, you don't care?
Look, that's money. You know, and it used to be one thing, and I know you cannot expect, you can't expect to get blood from a stone. If a guy's not super charismatic, he's not. So you need a hype machine behind him, fine. It's 2012. The UFC is now on network TV. It's growing and growing and growing where you want to become a star. You know, you actually have to do the work. They can't do it all for you. When you get a mic stuck in your face, yeah, you don't have to act like a jackass. But, you know, who do you want next? I don't care if this is your first fight or not. If nothing else, have your default answer be whoever the champion is. If you're 155 pounds and you know, Kenny Florian is sitting at ringside doing announcing, point to him. Do anything. Don't just say, I don't care, or whoever they put in front of me. I mean, Manny Pacquiao gets drilled for that now with him saying, well, you know, when it comes to the Mayweather fight, I'm just, you know, out there fighting. You know, it's my promoter's job to give me the fight. People don't want to hear that nonsense. They want to hear you say at least something, anything. And again, you don't have to go over the top or make a jackass out of yourself, but you at least have to give them something. Why would people want to come see you again if you don't know who you want to fight? At least have the champion be your default answer.
Let me tell you something. Let me give you all a tip. If you're a UFC fighter listening to this right now, think about how many events UFC is running in 2012. Okay? There's a lot of them. I don't know what the number is, like 26. I don't remember, but there's a lot of them. And on every show, there's going to be like 10 fights. Now, let's imagine you're Joe Silva, the UFC booker for the main shows. Okay, that's a lot of fights you've got to create. So if you're thinking in your mind, well, I'm going to be a company man, and I'm going to go out there and say, I want to fight whoever they put in front of me. How is that making Joe Silva's job any easier? It makes Joe Silva's job easier, and he would appreciate it if you went out there and you called out Pat Barry, for example. Because then he can go, oh, he called out Pat Barry. Huh, I don't have anyone for Pat Barry. I'll put this fight together. Plus, it's a fight that now the fans have heard, and they're thinking, oh, yeah, you know, maybe I'd want to see that. Maybe I would want to see Sempervivi versus Pat Barry. Joe Silva makes a fight, everybody's happy. You go out there, and I think people think, oh, you know, the company probably likes it when I just say, I'll fight anybody. You know, I'll take on anyone. I'll take on whoever you put in front of me. Okay, obviously, we know you'll take on anybody, okay? You're a UFC fighter. You're going to take on whoever we put in front of you. Help us out and give us a name. Make this easier for everybody. Think about when the fight is over, as a fighter, why is the first thing you do put all your clothes back on? The answer is because on your clothes, it's all of your sponsorship stuff. You know, Pete's Pizza is right there on your thing, and
he'd be on mine.
Yeah, Frank's television repair and whatever else. Okay, you've got your sponsors, all of their logos all over your stuff. You're wearing Frank's towing, his hat. Okay, you're putting all this stuff on because your sponsors are paying you money, and when the fight's over, they want you doing your promo with all their swag on. Why? Because that's their commercial time. They can't buy a 30-second commercial on a UFC on Fox event. It's the cost is extraordinary. But they can have you wear all their stuff, and thus it's a commercial for them when you go out there and you wear their stuff and you thank them as a sponsor. Now, that also means this is your commercial time. You're getting free airtime on TV. So, when they put that camera on you, and they put that microphone in front of you, and they turn on all the lights, they're essentially saying, hey, buddy, make yourself a star and make some money. And then you nonchalantly go, well, I don't care. Way to go. Way to go with that free television commercial time. You blew it. And when I watched that UFC on ESPN deal where the ESPN outside the lines where, you know, they said unnamed fighters came to us and they complained about the pay, $6,000 a show. I'm thinking, if you're one of those people that's complaining about making $6,000 to fight. And then after you win your fight, you go on TV and they say, who do you want to fight? And you go, I don't care. Well, you know what? You don't even deserve $6,000 because you didn't sell $6,000 worth of tickets to this event. You didn't sell $6,000 worth of advertising. UFC lost money on you. So don't complain about your pay and then go out there and not have an answer when they're trying to give you commercial time and trying to make a star out of you. You need to go out there and make a star out of yourself. I was infuriated watching UFC on FX, some of these promos. Just furious.
Oh, and I, you know, since you brought it up, too, neither one of us had a chance to see it last week. But after seeing that UFC piece that ESPN E60 did, and then, you know, later on reading a Eddie Goldman article that he did that a boxing writer had put up on a boxing site over, you know, comparing the boxing, you know, setup to the UFC setup. It was just like, you know, give me a break. Yes, they're a private company. They're always going to have this being a private company, you know, but realistically, it's so idiotic to have a story like that where, again, you know, where else do you make $6,000? You know, it doesn't matter how much that company's making. What are you worth? And that's, people forget about that. People, there is a level of entitlement with some people when it's like, you know, just because they can afford to pay you more doesn't necessarily mean you've earned that right. You know, you win the fight, you're going to get $6,000 more, you know? And it just, that was such a ludicrous waste of space. I mean, there had to be, you know, a kid born without an arm in the Dominican Republic who can throw 80 miles an hour. There had to be some other story that they could have put on which would have made more impact than that. It was a complete waste of time. It was a story just to do a story, and I don't see why Dana White was so, you know, incensed about it. I mean, in a way, I kind of get it. But realistically, ESPN does this with a lot of things, and it wasn't poor, because at the end of it, I think the average person watching would be able to take from that, you know what, no, I think the UFC's pay structure is pretty fair. I mean, honestly, with the way it was presented, I didn't think it was way out of line for people at the end of that thing to go, no, I kind of get what the UFC's coming from on that. So, I don't know, it was a complete waste of space.
It wasn't that bad. I mean, I know a lot of people thought, oh, my God.
It certainly wasn't a smear job on the UFC. And again, I think they came out looking pretty good.
Well, here's the key to the whole thing. The biggest problem with the entire thing was the claim that UFC only paid out 10% of revenue to their fighters. Because
yep.
that's absolutely, absolutely not the case. That is wrong. And
anyone out there too, you know, and this isn't even just a hype to the site, but with Golden Glory and the UFC and the Overeem situation taking place, you know, it was only in December, I believe, that Dave had wrote up in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, you know, the details of what was going on with that, which, forget about even that one. There was the Couture one. It's public record that guys are paid more, there are bonuses, and there are other things at play. And again, that may not make the smaller guy happy about things, but that's tough for them. Because if you do earn your keep, you do get paid, period.
If UFC is running a pay-per-view for $54, then they're going to make, let's see, about $21. That's their cut. The pay-per-view company takes the rest. Think about that, by the way. That's why Vince wants to start his own pay-per-view company, or has for decades. He's always wanted to get away from the pay-per-view companies. So they're making $21 off every pay-per-view. They're not making $54, okay? The pay-per-view company takes their cut. UFC takes $21. So in the Overeem lawsuit, they talked about how he got, I believe, $2 per buy. All right? That's one half of the main event. And Brock Lesnar guaranteed, as the biggest UFC draw over the past 4 years, guaranteed he got more. So let's just presume that Brock got $3 per buy and Overeem got $2 per buy. That's $5 of every pay-per-view buy that they paid out to those two guys. So that right there, using very basic math, you're already way above 10%. And that's not talking anybody else on the show or any other bonus. So it's not difficult to find out that the 10% is an inaccurate number. But the key is, even after they claim 10%, they still let Lorenzo say, no, that in fact is not true. We are in line with these other companies. We are in line with the NFL and whatever else they brought up there. And I think the whole thing was, Lorenzo came off so good in that piece that that was the strength. That was the reason this didn't come off so bad, is because they chose Lorenzo to be the spokesman. If they would have chosen like Dana, this would have been like complete insanity. And there's a reason that Dana does what he does and Lorenzo does what he does. Lorenzo was great on this show. He was great on this show. I watch a lot of I watch a lot of shows where they do investigations. Usually it involves pro wrestling, and they talk to a promoter, and they just come off so shady and just Marty. So slimy. And Lorenzo doesn't come off like that at all. He comes off like, I'm a guy that has built this company, and I've tried to do my best. And he comes off so good on television. And as a result, I think the ESPN piece, it ended up being fine.
Oh, God. And again, yeah, and that's the reason I've always been, you know, it was after Dana's last big blow-up where he got in trouble, I thought, you know, nothing against Dana White, but they do need more. The more PR people they have, the better. And again, Lorenzo coming off just, you know, smooth and polished and came off like a professional businessman. And unfortunately, Dana sometimes does not, which, you know, again, he is going to be, you know, you serve.
Actually, hold on. Let's finish
strength.
This after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. WrestlingObserver.com is the place you can go for more. If you only get to hear this show one time per week, you are missing out. We do radio shows every single day. Every single day there is a radio show up on the website. And sometimes several shows per day. Most Thursdays I end up doing 3 to 4 shows. And this week was no exception. 15 radio shows on average a week go up on the website from our various producers, including Mike, one half of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. And the subscription area, which is $10.99 a month. That's it, $10.99 a month. You not only get access to every single new show we do, but you get access to every show we've ever done. If you go up there right now to WrestlingObserver.com and you sign up for $10.99, you can jump into the archives and listen to a show we did in 2006, 2007, 2008, 2005. Every show we've ever done, there are tens of thousands of hours of audio in the archives right now. If you love this show and you only get to hear once per week, you are missing out. In fact, if you head up right now, scroll down the right-hand side of the page at WrestlingObserver.com, there is a listing of our latest 4 free radio shows. So click on them, download them. They're MP3s. You don't have to fill out any of those wacky forms where you have to try to figure out what the mystery numbers are on the screen. No pop-ups, nothing. Just click them. They download. Listen to them. And if you like what you hear, just think. Tens of thousands of hours of audio for only $10.99 per month. If you've got a commute, if you work out and like stuff to listen to, if you just want to listen to something before you go to bed, which apparently a lot of people do from what we've been told and what we've heard from angry wives, well, WrestlingObserver.com is the place for you. Check it out. Audio quality, probably even better than you're listening to right now, because you're getting the original MP3 audio straight to your iPod, iPad, Android, whatever your listening device is. Check it out for free at WrestlingObserver.com. And again, if you like what you hear, it's only $10.99 a month, and you'll never run out of audio. Guaranteed you will never run out of audio. So check it out. And we were talking about the Outside the Line special. Mike, you had a little more to say about Lorenzo Fertitta.
No, it was just actually, again, he came off so well, and you don't get a chance, unless you really follow the UFC hard, you really don't get a chance to hear about him too much. Usually when he is interviewed or has been interviewed by, you know, sports business dailies and things like that, it talks a lot about the casino business and how they got started, and a lot of the stuff you've heard over and over again. So, again, you know, the UFC came off well, and he was one of the reasons why, and one of the biggest reason why. And again, the more PR people they get like that, the better. And nothing against Dana White, but not that Dana White has to be a Muppet or a mascot or anything like that. You know, I still like him leading, you know, the post-fight interviews and things like, you know, or the post-fight press conferences and things like that. But, you know, it was a good example of, you know, the more people they can have to present the UFC's case like that, the better. Right? You know, I've always thought the same thing about Vince McMahon, too, and he was smacking notes out of Armin Katayan's hands and doing that sort of stuff. It's like, you know, you're a publicly traded company, and, you know, you do have a lot of, you know, eyes on you. You probably should have somebody else doing things like this. And you know, again, the UFC, Dana White to a, you know, a far lesser degree. But, you know, I think it's probably time that the more guys they have like this, the better. The more Lorenzo we get, I think the better for the company, at least.
We are running low on time before the Royal Rumble this year. It's next weekend. And who do you think, Mike, is going to win this year?
I am still standing pat with Randy Orton. You know, again, and this stemming from just the belief that they always love that surprise coming back. You know, obviously, as you were saying last week, the ability to get heat in their hometown, in his hometown, and having him get come back and get screwed or something like that, maybe a strong, you know, too strong of a thing for them to go away from. But I honestly believe because he's a guy that could lose it. You know, the thing with the Rumble, you know, if he wins the shot to be in the main event at WrestleMania, but Randy Orton loses it in the Elimination Chamber, they decide to go a different direction, it's not going to hurt him either. So, again, I think, one, I think he's going to win it outright anyway. But, two, it gives them more options, I think, if he wins it, you know, in the next couple of months leading into WrestleMania, if they decide to make some moves.
Now, the thing about Randy Orton and the Royal Rumble and what you just said, I think they've really got to get back into the habit of making sure that whoever wins the Rumble headlines WrestleMania. Obviously, they're not going to headline above John Cena and The Rock, but there was a string there of guy wins Rumble, doesn't get title shot because maybe he loses it at the Elimination Chamber, or somebody else wins a different title at the Elimination Chamber. So the guy that won the Rumble faces somebody who was not the champion going into the Rumble. I think that Rumble is still like a legit stipulation in that people believe, okay, guy who wins gets title shot at Mania. It's a big deal. Not as big a deal as it used to be before there were title matches like every week and titles change hands all the time, but it's still a real life stipulation. So I think they need to, I think they need to be careful with that one by not having the guy win and then not get the shot. I just think it waters down the whole concept of the Rumble.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I agree with you 100%. I mean, it really should be a sacred cow, but you also have to think like, you know, they do, which is erratically. And if they are going to do it, at least when they, you know, unlike an Alberto Del Rio or a Daniel Bryan or a, hey, you name anybody else on that roster that's not really Cena or Orton, if they are going to do it again, at least it's not something where it's going to damage him any further or make him look any worse.
All right,
how it makes it look themselves, you know, hey, that's a different story.
We got some other matches here on the show. There's the Royal Rumble. 30 individuals this year, not 40. Supposedly anybody is eligible to enter. Which,
except Evan Bourne.
Except, well, yeah, we'll talk about him in a second. But this would mean, when they say that anyone is eligible, I guess that means that Punk, Ziggler, Cena, Kane, Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry, and Big Show are all eligible as well, which could conceivably play into the storyline somehow. But Punk is facing Ziggler for the title, WWE title. John Laurinaitis, a special guest referee. Vicky Guerrero, Jack Swagger, banned from ringside. Laurinaitis has vowed to screw CM Punk. Mike, does he?
You know, with them saying it like this, no, which either means, you know, I want to say that Punk will overcome, you know, the threat of getting sued, or not getting sued, I'm sorry, getting screwed over, but I also, for some reason, can see maybe someone that you didn't expect screwing Punk over. I don't know who that could be, if it would be a Mick Foley or something like that, but instead of thinking so negatively, I'm going to think that somehow Punk evades slipping on the banana peel, Johnny Ace does it, you know, Ziggler falls down too, and Punk gets the win, because I think that would make the most sense. Although, if Ziggler actually beat him clean in a great match, that would make me happy too, but that's not going to happen.
John Cena versus Kane. Who cares?
Yeah.
I hate this feud.
When times are good, like when they brought up the teddy bear last week with Undertaker and Vince's teddy bear from when he was a little boy, he was all burned up and all that. I mean, it's bad enough, it's hokey enough, it's dumb enough. You figure we would have had enough of this. I mean, there's been so many examples of it, but Edge and Kane the last time around. I mean, this is giving it a run for its money because of the ineptness. That was like bad comedy, even though you didn't know who the bad guy was. We've got an inept U.S. champion or former U.S. champion who couldn't get the girl. He can't change a tire. He gets beat up all the time. You know, one thing after another, and it's just this whole thing has been bad. Jack Swagger then beats this beat-up goof, and then for no apparent reason, when it looks like he's looking strong, no, John Cena beats him up instead of beating up Kane. All of this, nobody looks good in it whatsoever, other than, you know, at least on Monday night when Cena was kicking the crap out of Swagger, he was getting a reaction, because like he did when he went off on Alberto Del Rio after Money in the Bank, it's not hard for people, you know, they're not going to cheer him against The Rock or anything like that, but they boo him far less if he's not being a goof and at least he's beating somebody's ass.
And then we've got Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry, and Big Show, a cage match three-way for the title. I think that the Royal Rumble has two potential finishes. I think that either Randy Orton returns and wins the Rumble, at which point Mark Henry becomes the World Heavyweight Champion at some point between now and WrestleMania, or I think that CM Punk retains the title and Chris Jericho wins the Royal Rumble to set up Jericho versus Punk. Because I firmly believe that the idea is still to do Randy Orton versus Mark Henry at Mania, so that Randy can win the title and get his wins back for all those times that he put over Mark Henry earlier this fall. And the other match that seems a lock for Mania is CM Punk versus Chris Jericho. And by the way, we'll never get an answer to this, and the answer is there is no answer. But based on the Chris Jericho character that we've seen for the past 3 weeks, I have absolutely no idea what those mystery videos had to do with Chris Jericho.
I think that was the point. I honestly, you know, no matter what it was, people would be going, is it Undertaker? Is it Kane? Is it Jericho? So I think you were in a lose situation no matter how you cut it. So I think they just threw a red herring out there on, could it be Taker? Could it be Kane? Then they bring Kane back. So it's like, okay, is it Undertaker? Maybe it's Undertaker. I don't know. So I think it was a red herring thrown up, and that's why it happened.
So, yeah, Daniel Bryan, Henry, and Big Show. I don't know how the three-way in a cage is going to be, but I have certainly enjoyed Daniel Bryan as heel champion, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but, you know, I had heard one of their ideas a while back was that Daniel Bryan would lose a title, and then he would snap, and that would be his heel turn. He has already turned heel, so he could have held the title longer than they originally anticipated, which means that perhaps he will hold the title through the Royal Rumble. I highly doubt it,
yeah,
but it's certainly possible.
Well, I don't think he holds it through February, even if he does hold it through the Rumble, where it's, you know, Henry and Show slam into each other, and then, you know, again, looking at AJ or something like that, and then Bryan gets the pin. I don't think he holds it past February if that's the case, but, you know, it's too bad because with people, I think, would respond to Mark Henry as a babyface. He can still kick ass and be a babyface, although I don't know if they would do such a thing. But, you know, you really could do Orton and Bryan at WrestleMania. It's just, you know, they're not going to do it. And it's kind of too bad because, you know, we like the character of Daniel Bryan right now. And I know a lot of people listening to this do, but I don't think it's got the teeth to the average WWE fan. But I think if they kept going with it the way it is going right now, I think you could really hook some people in. And I don't think there's, you know, that big of a reason to pull the plug, although, again, it's hard to have faith that they won't.
SmackDown's actually done some, I don't have Friday's rating, but the Friday before did a 2-2, which is a great number.
The show is the best one they do out of the four shows that are available to you from WWE.
Well, the point I'm making is people may be into Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I'm in that camp with you that I think they certainly were with Henry.
Yeah, and actually, we'll see how the Henry shot at the title does for this past Friday's. I haven't got a SmackDown rating yet, but if it does like a 2-2-2-3, then I don't think it's possible to argue that it's not Mark Henry. But we'll find out. One last thing before break, as Mike alluded to earlier, Evan Bourne suspended 60 days. Another wellness policy violation just weeks after coming off his 30-day suspension. So he noted on his Twitter, sometimes we are our own worst enemy. That certainly appears to be the case. But he'll be back 2 weeks before Mania. We'll see if he even gets on the card. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, getting geared up for the Thug Assassin pay-per-view, which starts moments after the show goes off the air. Head over to your local pay-per-view channel, your pay-per-view provider. Check that one out. We'll
they
see how it goes.
Explaining the new UWF title situation tonight as well.
That's right. There's the champion, Rashi Brown, has retired due to injuries. So, therefore, the new champion will debut tonight.
History
and,
made.
That's right, history made. You can see it yourself on pay-per-view. And, call your local cable operator and say, "Hi, I'd like Thug Assassin." See what they have to say. Anyway, before we go, Mike, are you looking forward to Haywire with Gina Carano, which is getting great reviews?
Actually, I really, really am, just because of that reason. And I remember Cynthia Rothrock in the 80s, you know. I grew up on Kung Fu Theater on Channel 54 in Baltimore after wrestling was on and stuff like that. You know, I like movies like this, you know, goofy action movies sometimes where you don't have to think. I'm not a big movie watcher, but
or thinker.
It seems like universally this thing has been praised and her performance has been praised. So good on it all the way around.
It was interesting, Roger Ebert, in the review, he put her over huge, said she could be a huge action star, and called her retired fighter, which I was unaware that she'd officially retired. So I presume he threw that in himself, but maybe Roger Ebert has outscooped all of us.
Ooh,
I guess we'll find out someday. But yeah,
I'll say this. I know it's putting the cart before the horse. Can you imagine Ronda Rousey calling out Gina Carano? It would be great.
Yep, it may happen someday. It may happen. We're going to wrap it up today, everybody. Don't forget, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go for more. Dave Meltzer and I have a call-in show tonight that you can get information on over at WrestlingObserver.com. Download it later on. Should be a fun time. We'll be up next week with a whole bunch of new shows. Tons of new shows coming up next week. Should be a fun time. Don't forget, Hood Justice is tonight. Next weekend is UFC on Fox 2 with Chael Sonnen fighting for a shot at Anderson Silva. To, I guess, gain his revenge. And Royal Rumble next Sunday as well. So we'll have a big Royal Rumble show next week here on the program. That's it from here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.